Hello and welcome to the Eaton Centre for Innovation and Research in Learning podcast, where we speak to leading experts in education on important themes in teaching and learning. I'm John Beale, Researcher in Residence at Eaton College, and today I'm joined by two members of the research team at Research Schools International, or RSI. RSI partners with schools and educational organisations around the world to inspire research-based innovation that supports students' learning and well-being. The RSI research team collaborates with educators to conduct research with direct practical relevance, lead professional development, and freely disseminate findings and research-based innovation. RSI's work primarily focuses on supporting students to develop character skills and global competencies. Today, from RSI, we have Dr. Christina Hinton, founder and executive director of RSI, and Dr. Jim Heal, director of practice at RSI. Christina and Jim, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
Tell us, first of all, what is RSI?
So RSI, as you said, works with schools around the world to conduct research, professional development, and dissemination of findings. So the real philosophy behind it is for educators to partner with researchers to conduct research that has practical implications on the ground so that the findings are usable and actually have real-world impact.
Okay, great. Why did you start RSI?
So I founded RSI actually because I originally came from neuroscience and education, and I was working on a project at the OECD at the time where we were looking at the implications of neuroscience research for education, because it was clear that there was quite a lot of new information about how we learn that wasn't yet taken into account in the education systems of the OECD countries. But the further I got into that work, the more I realized that it wasn't just the neuroscience of learning that hasn't been taken into account often in practice on the ground, but actually research on learning more broadly. So there was quite a lot of great research in educational psychology and education, et cetera, that also wasn't taken into account in what's happening on the ground. And so then I became very passionate about helping bridge the gap between research on learning from an interdisciplinary perspective and what happens in real schools with real teachers and real kids. And so that's why I originally founded RSI as a vehicle to connect research and practice.
So you mentioned OECD there, just for our listeners, clarify what exactly OECD is.
Sure, so it's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and it is an organization that works with the developed democracies around the world to help drive policy in various areas. And so one of those areas is education. They have a director of education where I was.
And as I understand it, John Dewey's vision of laboratory schools influenced your vision for RSI. Could you tell us how exactly it influenced that?
Very much so. So, you know, John Dewey saw this gap between research and practice already about 100 years ago, and he wanted to found these laboratory schools. So he founded one at the University of Chicago where analogous to a teaching hospital in medicine, it was a space in education where practitioners and researchers were working side by side, hand in hand, to make sure that new innovations were coming into practice, and at the same time that what was happening in the ground was also captured in research so it could be shared more broadly. And so he really did this wonderful work in linking research and practice at the school. And so we were, my professors that I was working with at Harvard, so Professor Kurt Fisher and I originally did this work. We were really inspired by John Dewey's vision, and so we wanted to connect with that, and we wanted to spread it around the world. So our vision was to partner with existing schools to help them have a sort of laboratory approach to learning. So they were both, of course, schools for teaching children, but also schools to reflect on learning and teaching as a science.
Fantastic. Just in connection with that, is that a way that you see the future of schooling going in light of the way research is being done in schools, the concept of laboratory schools, more of these emerging?
Yes, I do. I think they play an important role. I don't think every school has to be one, but I do think they play an important role as thought leaders in the field. So schools like Eaton that we're working with, who are, you know, really committed to using research to inform practice and understand practice and then also share with other schools what they've learned, I think that plays a really key role in helping integrate research and practice in the field.
So I'm going to ask a more philosophical question, if you like, or methodological, if you like. Why is research in schools important?
Yeah, I mean, I think in order to be able to answer that question, you first have to think about what has changed over the last generation or so in terms of what we know about how people learn. And I think it was Dan Willingham who wrote about how, you know, we've learned more even at the level of cognitive science in terms of how the brain functions and develops in the last 25 years than we have previously been able to ascertain over the last 2,500 years. And yet, interestingly, the education field has been, some would argue, slow to respond and react to that growing body of knowledge in a manner that enables practitioners to live out those practices and be informed by them every day. And so we do believe that there is this, as we said, growing body of knowledge, a stronger and more robust understanding of the manner in which people learn and in ways in which we can promote learning. And what we're really interested in is to say, well, okay, well, what would happen if we reimagined the locus of where that work was taking place, right? You've long had this divide or perceived divide between higher education and practitioners in schools doing the work every day. And I agree that that's been a systemic problem, but to focus on the divide itself and to become preoccupied with some kind of taking on the system notion of what a better world might look like, instead there's a more common sense approach to that, which is to say, can you get schools and the people that work within schools to think and act like researchers in a manner that would support their practice in the day to day? And so your question is a well-framed one, because your question was not what does research look like as informing the education sector. Your question was, what does research in schools look like? And so I think that there's a very powerful movement that's happening, and in large part it's being driven by a discourse here in the UK. I mean, Christina and I both practice out of Boston, where there is, I think, a slightly less robust conversation and discourse happening in the US. In the UK, practitioners are saying, I care about this stuff. I think that this could inform my work in interesting and new ways. And I'd like to be able to learn more and connect to other people who know and are also interested in learning more. And so I think we might be on the cusp of something that feels like a relatively, not a new movement, but perhaps a formalizing and a systematizing of what research-informed practice can look like. And I don't think it's about bridging that old divide as much as it is about relocating the where the conversation is happening and where the practice can be best kind of improved upon and implemented.
Yeah.
And the collaboration between researchers and practitioners is particularly powerful because, you know, they each have different sets of expertise and skills. So researchers obviously have training and methodologies that teachers, you know, don't have off the top of their head. At the same time, teachers have expertise in what does this mean for me on the ground in my real classroom. So we talk a lot about research-informed practice. So for them to take research and use it to inform their practice, since teaching is both a science and an art, so they can, you know, have that expertise brought to the table as well. So I think it's really key having the researchers and the practitioners working together on this, on taking research into practice.
So do you think research in schools then, as it were, it looks kind of multi-layered. It's not just researchers working side by side by teachers, as it were, as separate entities, but it's in addition to that, teachers themselves engaged in research projects and also members of leadership teams in schools, but also having researchers in schools, in collaboration schools as well. Is that the kind of vision you think would be best?
I think it can be. So with RSI, the way that it works is we partner our research team with the practitioners on the ground. So the questions are shaped by the needs and interests of teachers on the ground. What's really happening in the school that you need support on? What do you want to find out? So it's really motivated by them. But then we, as researchers, help them shape it into a testable research question, you know, help them organize and design a study where they can look at that rigorously, analyze the data, obviously use methodologies that we're trained in. And then when we share the findings, that again comes back to the practitioners, where we say, okay, here's what we found. Now, you designed something for your classroom based on this research findings that we're presenting, because you know what's going to work and how, and you can try it out in your classroom. And then also I think it can be powerful for them to engage in research a bit there, where they try things out and then reflect on what the, you know, what they find is working. So I think, I think it's really powerful to have the teachers and researchers collaborating in that way, as well as the teachers then following up as kind of reflective practitioners. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect them to be researchers per se in the same way an academic researcher is, but I do think that it's wonderful for them to be reflective practitioners who are, you know, trying out new things and thinking in a rigorous way about mm-hmm. whether it works.
Mm-hmm. So is there, sorry, Julie.
No, I was going to say, I think that that works to ameliorate two of the issues that have long sort of affected the way that this kind of work gets done. The first of them being that practitioners in the field oftentimes, when it comes to the role that research plays in their lives, are being provided answers to questions they didn't even ask in the first place. Mm-hmm. And secondly, there's this question that's been long asked of the teaching profession, is that how can it become more professionalized? And so by inviting teachers to say, you know, that there is a body of knowledge, you can connect to that body of knowledge and to other practitioners in your field, and that you can engage in meaningful discourse, meaningful practices that are connected to that kind of field, quote unquote, that is something that sort of many other professions have already gone through, mm-hmm. that kind of arc of evolution. And again, there are the tired old comparisons between education and medicine. But I think the reason why that comparison keeps coming back again and again in people's minds and resonates is because, in a sense, it's almost as if education is kind of fawning over what it might look like if it was more closely aligned to what medicine has gone through over the last 150 or so years, which is essentially becoming a professional body, mm-hmm. and becoming a field in all that we know that to be.
And so, in connection with the professionalisation question, then, if as you're recommending, more teachers are doing research within their practice, is there a need also for there to be training for teachers in research skills, and vice versa for those researchers who are working with schools that maybe haven't got a lot of experience teaching, or if their experience teaching is mostly all in higher education and they're working in school settings, is there a need that they require training within teaching experience of that before they do this?
Yeah, so again, I don't think we should take over each other's jobs, but I do think that some training in order to effectively collaborate is helpful. So, you know, at RSI, of course, we hire academics, but academics don't know how to work with schools in practical ways necessarily from their just training in academia. We actually need to train them to listen, to empathize, to understand the needs of schools on the ground, and then to design for those needs, you know. So that's a new set of skills that they learn when they start working with our team. And the type of research that we do is quite different because it's focused on practical outcomes. So we're always asking, what can you do with this? What can teachers do with this? How can it be useful for them? Not just what's interesting. And I do think, just to as a qualifier, I do think there's a place for academic research that, you know, is filling theoretical gaps that builds the field over time as well. That's just not the work that we do. We want to do work that's more impactful directly. So yeah, the researchers do. They need new training to learn how to collaborate in that way. And then I think in the same hand, teachers, it can be really powerful to help them learn a bit about research and thinking like a researcher. Again, not to become academic researchers, but to become reflective practitioners where they can, you know, come up with a theory, try it out in their classroom, collect some information about it, reflect on what they're doing. I think anytime a teacher is doing that, they're improving their practice, mm-hmm. because just having that sort of reflective perspective in and of itself, even if you're not collecting the most valid and reliable data, it's still really useful and I think does improve their craft.
Yeah.
So.
And there's also glimmers of hope even at the policy level in the UK, which is to say, both in higher ed and coming out of the DfE for secondary and middle and elementary, these ideas of these frameworks that are stipulating and sort of setting the table for the role that research might play. And of course, you know, policy is going to be subject to many of the kind of tumultuous political kind of things that might may or may not be happening over the coming months and years or decades. But I would urge people at all parts of the system to respond to and sort of fulfill the promise of some of those sort of policy initiatives, because the language is now there. It's now the early career framework that's come out from the DfE speaks to the idea that what a novice teacher should know and be able to do in the early years of their career is to be able to understand and implement and enact evidence-backed practices in their classroom. Well, if that language is there at the level of policy, then, you know, drive through that gate, you know, make that a reality and take up that mantle. But to Christina's point, that doesn't mean to say that any of this should be happening in any way to negate the work of other parts of the system. Mm-hmm. It's not an either or, it's a both and. Yeah. And what we're pushing for is the notion that we think that if schools themselves can show up more meaningfully to this question of how research can inform practice, then everyone wins, right? Like, it's not that they're trying to take that away from other professionals and other parts of the system, but that they're making their own contribution to a growing understanding of how this can work and improve outcomes for kids. I mean, that is ultimately that's where the buck stops at the end of it all. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, thank you. And what significant changes do you think that research in schools will lead to?
Do you want me to take this one? back to where I ended that last point, I think that the burden of proof on this movement is eventually going to have to be in terms of outcomes for students in classrooms. I think that because it's relatively nascent in its own kind of growth and development as a way of looking at the work, I think you have to sort of pick your battles, and you have to start by saying, how can we garner a certain requisite sort of critical mass of interest around what it means to back up your practice with evidence? Then once you've gathered the kind of the people that it would need to make this more systematically sort of powerful, then you can start to say, okay, is it moving the needle? In what ways? To what extent? And I think that again, back to our analogy of medicine, right? That went from being able to say that there is a better way of caring for patients towards ultimately in its more kind of mature incarnation. Okay, how is that landing in terms of outcomes for patients? Mm-hmm. And then that is the sort of ultimate feedback loop that would validate these efforts. So I don't necessarily feel like it's there yet, but I would argue that should be the bar and the marker of ultimate impact and success, that we should be able to speak to how is this actually improving outcomes.
And I think if you're basing your practices on evidence of what works, you will have better practices and better outcomes eventually over time, because you know you're confident that what you're doing is actually going to work because it's been tested out and tried. So I think that's really, really important. Mm-hmm.
But we should clarify that those outcomes need not just be academic.
I was going to say, absolutely. One of the areas that RSI has become particularly interested in, mostly because it's schools that have been approaching us and saying this is what they want to drive their questioning, is around character development and character education. And again, like, that has also been subject to a growing body of literature and a growing body of evidence over recent years, so much so that it's no longer this kind of wishy-washy area that doesn't seem scientific enough or empirical enough in its approach. Actually, no, there is a body of research that says there are certain traits that contribute to a rounded, healthy human being, and that they, in large part, can be studied and understood and codified and then sort of intervened and experimented with, not at the extent of saying that it's about experimenting on people, but these notions can be experimented with, educational methodologies can be experimented with, and that lives within something robust. It's not just, I get it because I understand school because I went to one,
yeah.
which has long sort of played the kind of, again, the sort of amateurizing of education. So I just think that there's, it feels to me as though research within the field of education is growing up, and that now is the time for people to be able to seize on that momentum. And I'm personally just really excited about the very many and various ways in which it's going to grow up and what will be the sort of markers of its maturation as it becomes a more kind of connected, thoughtful, and ultimately, one would hope, impactful way of looking at how people learn.
Mm-hmm. So then, so the focus on outcomes is at least as much focused on character education as it is on academic attainment, you would say.
Absolutely. I mean, in RSI's work, we focus primarily on character, education, and global competencies. So we're really passionate about helping students develop into, you know, well-rounded, healthy, and happy, you know, members of society. And that's really important to us.
So perhaps elaborate on what exactly you define as a global competency.
Sure. So that overlaps somewhat with character education. So character education, of course, we're looking at things like empathy, compassion, you know, gratitude, this sorts of skills and dispositions. And global competencies, we're interested in things like perspective taking, appreciation for diversity, empathy or respect for people who are different from you. You know, these kinds of things. So it's really competencies that will help you function in our globalized world.
Right, I see. So the kind of competencies you need to engage in a cosmopolitan society or a secular society, you know, understanding and respecting different beliefs, different cultures, and so on and so forth. Thank you. What do you think are the most important areas of research in the 21st century?
Well, I think global competencies is certainly one of them, because as we're, you know, we have unprecedented levels of migration, globally interdependent economies and political systems. We have, you know, information zipping around the planet at speeds which were previously unheard of, and students need to figure out how am I going to, you know, flourish in this world. So we just did a project on global competencies, which was again partnered with the OECD and also with a UK charity called Round Square, and we collected data across 150 schools across 30 countries, and we were interested in which practices are effective at developing these global competency outcomes, which had been defined by the OECD. And so we looked at a whole bunch of practices, and we identified at the end of the study, 5 that were very powerful in terms of promoting those global competency outcomes. And so we both found, you know, correlations between the outcomes and the competencies, but also we dug into kind of qualitative short answer responses and found a lot of evidence from teachers and students all around the world saying that these practices really can promote these types of outcomes that we're interested in. So that was a really exciting study. And building on that, now we're planning kind of a phase 2 study. We're going to put together an international network of schools around the world, and we're going to help them deepen their integration of those 5 practices. So now that we're quite confident that these are you know, helpful to promote the global competency outcomes, we're going to invite schools to be part of a project where we look at, okay, how much are these happening in your schools? And where is there room for growth? And then we'll be able to feed that back that information to them. And also, are they happening effectively? So for example, one of the practices is volunteering. That's quite effective at promoting a whole range of global competencies. But it's best if the students are encouraged to empathetically connect with the groups that they're volunteering with over time, and, you know, rather than a sort of one-shot program. So we'd be looking at things like, are you doing volunteering at your school? When you do it, are you doing it in kind of a more deeper, engaged way? And then we'll be able to feed that back to the school. And then the idea is that, ideally, we'll be able to sort of propagate these research-based findings in schools around the world to help promote these global competencies. And I mean, the real end game is to ultimately develop a global society that's more capable of working together, of collaborating, mm-hmm. you know, for scientific advancements, for example, of solving things like the climate challenges we're facing, mm-hmm. of, you know, interacting with each other in ways that are kind and respectful. So really we're trying to help support the next generation to have some skills to do those things, which, you know, hopefully better than our generation has. That's kind of the...
Well, and further,
passion behind that project.
Well, and further to Christina's example, is it's worth noting that what's striking about that example is that it acknowledges that human growth happens within contexts. And I think, you know, again, this is not to sort of naysay earlier sort of educational movements, but one of the things that always frustrated me about what has sort of been banded as 21st century skills mm-hmm. is that for the longest time, at least insofar as how it's been interpreted by the field, it's been seen as just happening as though in a vacuum. Like the skills themselves are presented and talked about as abstractions. They're not set within a context of change, of development, of humanity, of interrelatedness, of all of the things that make us who we are. And so they've been very successful in terms of them being very sticky concepts that people have been able to sort of pick up, talk about, put in their promotional literature, and oftentimes, all too often, leave it at that.
Right.
Whereas what we're saying is that if you're going to understand something, it needs to be that it's understood where you are, and for who you stand for, and it needs to live in what you do every day. And what we love doing is working with schools and in large part sort of helping them hold a mirror up to who they are. And then saying, okay, now you have a better picture of who you are and what you do. So what? Now what? You know, what do you want to do about it to make it better, deeper, less of this, more of that, whatever those sort of interventions or ways of thinking about the work might be. It's got to start with something that says something about who you are. And that's why I think that there's a more specific and contextually specific way of thinking about this work that we try to advocate for.
Yeah, and we help the schools be more intentional about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than just going about their work, they're thinking, what am I doing? Why? What's working? Why? And what do I want? What are my values? They have to clarify their values, and then they have to take steps toward them, you know, using research.
So have you found that to be a big part of your work, that when you work with schools, an important aspect of your work in the initial phase or ongoing throughout is that schools discover or redefine themselves, or discover their self-identity or redefine what exactly their identity is, or in the sense of maybe specifying their core values? Redefining those values. Is that core to your work, you find?
Not so much redefining as asking questions that help to define.
Right.
All right. And then saying, okay, what does this mean? I mean, it's not on its face, that doesn't sound like anything too revelatory, mm-hmm. but the problem is that schools and organizations writ large very rarely ask those kinds of questions of mm-hmm. themselves. And if they do, it can tend to remain at the surface level. And again, it's the same for the kinds of educational practices that have become highly popular and part of the kind of zeitgeist, you know, chief amongst them, growth mindset, right? Growth mindset is on its face, a powerful way of thinking about student disposition to work and learning. But the problem was the profundity of its application. You know, a lot of practitioners thought that they understood what it stood for, and figuratively put a poster on the wall that, or sometimes literally put a poster on the wall that said what growth mindset was, and then said, okay, that's that. What let's you know, that's fantastic. And the question is, like, and Dweck herself had to, in a sense, go on a, I don't know what to call it, maybe an apology tour meets a revenge tour, and say to people, no, that's not what I meant. I meant more than that,
right.
Or I meant it slightly differently than that. And so to your question about like what we're inviting schools to do, we're inviting schools to ask thoughtful questions of themselves, We're inviting schools to ask thoughtful questions of the research that exists in the world about how people learn and think and develop. And we're asking them not to stop at the surface of that. We're asking them to engage with it with a degree of thoughtfulness and depth that we think is sort of all too lacking within the work.
I see. So you mentioned your recent study on global competencies. What particular projects or focus do you have on the horizon? What are you focusing on next?
So probably one of the more exciting ones is the one I just mentioned. So putting together this international network of schools that want to focus on global competencies and how to develop them. And one of the reasons I'm excited about it is because we have some answers for them. We have some practice that we feel confident from the research will actually help support those skills. So I think there's kind of consensus now that these skills are important, but there was quite a dearth of research on how to actually develop them, and ours is kind of one of the first, you know, studies of its scope internationally to really provide some answers. So I think it'll be exciting to help schools use that in the ground to kind of update their practice.
Thank you very much. Right. Thank you very much for listening. We've been joined today by Dr. Christina Hinton and Dr. Jim Heal from Research Schools International. Where can they find out about you online?
It's www.researchschoolsinternational.org.
Okay, thank you, Christina. Thank you, Jim. You've been listening to the Eaton Centre for Innovation and Research in Learning podcast. Thank you.